We have green.
We have Zionists.
We have Zionists.
Who have entered the camp.
Who have entered the camp.
Protests across the country, especially universities and elite universities, are turning anti-Semitic. We even have protests here in New Mexico. We're joined by former federal prosecutor Reeve Swainston to talk about this issue and crime in New Mexico on this special edition of the No Doubt About It podcast.
You and I are told increasingly we have to choose between a left or right. Well, I'd like to suggest there is no such thing as a left or right. There's only an up or down.
This is the No Doubt About It podcast.
No Doubt About It.
And now your hosts, Christy and Mark Runcape.
Wildfire, you can't catch us now. Running, 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 yeah.
Much more serious morning this morning.
Yeah.
As we wake up and things are continuing to escalate at certain universities, including here at UNM.
Yes, and we're joined by Reeve Swainston, who is a former federal prosecutor. He was based out of Albuquerque. He's seen some of the toughest characters and some of the toughest cases on the federal level in this state and in this country. And we wanted to bring him in to give us some perspective. Reeve, it's the second time on the show. Thanks for coming back.
It's great to be here.
Yeah. No, thanks very much. And I wish it wasn't under these circumstances. So let's start with just a little overview of where we are. We have protests breaking out, and I think many of them have turned not only anti-Israel, just anti-Semitic across the board here in places like Columbia, Yale, NYU. And we're seeing a little different character to that at UNM, but still UNM has got a protest going on at the Duck Pond right now, which we'll get into all of that as well. And this has some threads that we're seeing in other protests as well. And so when you see this, first of all, just kind of your overall take of where we are with this right now.
I think like most Americans, I'm pretty stunned by what we're seeing. I look at it through the lens because I can't help it as a lawyer, obviously, and as a prosecutor. And I see young people on college campuses talking about how they are Hamas. It's something I never thought I would ever think I'd see.
Yeah.
I think many people feel that way. And just imagine after 9/11, if there were people protesting at college campuses all around the country and people overtly saying, I am Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
Within a microsecond, within a heartbeat, the FBI would know everything about that person. Everything. They'd be swept up and the investigation would begin. And if it was just some stupid kid, we'd know that. But if it was material support or otherwise of a terrorist organization like Hamas, then that young person would be facing some serious consequences.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at this and I'm just thinking, you know, for those of people that think, oh, this is a freedom of speech situation, it's escalated way beyond freedom of speech. These are now people are getting attacked on campuses. Yeah. They are, you know, some of these students now have to have security measures. Passover started yesterday. So a lot of these Jewish students are having to be protected. I'm just imagining, like, if you think this is all normal and this is okay, imagine, let's replace this with white supremacists going against black students. How fast would this last if they had the KKK out there holding up signs saying, guess what? You're next. You're our next target. We're coming after you. And then you're expected to go sit in a class right next to each other and you're unprotected. I just think this has reached a new level that Americans need to wake up because it's spreading like wildfire.
Well, that's absolutely true. Great take. So let me start with something a little different because I think it's easy to forget, even for people who are dialed into this sort of thing, how horrendous October 7th was because it's so easy to forget that. And I want to show you a picture. This girl's name is Nama Levy. She is currently still missing. And you may not recognize her from this shot. Looks like a very sweet girl. Her mom has begged for her return. She is still a hostage of Hamas. And by the way, that's the best case scenario, hoping she's still alive. But this is what Nama Levy looked like on October 7th. She was the girl that was pulled out of the Jeep. And you can see she was very seriously violated in so many different ways. So don't forget when someone says, I am Hamas. who they're lining up with. They're lining up with terrorist scum who went and slaughtered 1,200 people in the most vicious way possible.
Babies, mothers.
Across the board. So just don't forget what we're dealing with here. Because if you go with enough time and there's enough time, sometimes people forget and they get in the middle of a cause where they end up being a useful idiot. Because I think that's what we have. That and a combination of people who have very, very devious intentions. And we'll get into the breakdown of all this and what it looks like. But her mother, Nama's mother, continues to beg for her return. So don't forget, there are Americans that are still being held by Hamas. And of course, there are plenty of Jewish people that are as well. So just don't forget that. So we take it from there and we go to Colombia, because really that's where a lot of this started to sort of spin out of control. Colombia continues to have a massive presence on campus. And we just want to bring this sound up. We had it at the very top, but just listen to how creepy this is on the campus of Colombia.
We are going to create a human chain.
Where I am standing.
Where I am standing.
So that. They do not pass this point.
They being Jews.
And infringe upon our privacy.
You have no expectation of privacy on the campus of Columbia, do you, Reeve?
In a public area where everyone has the right to access?
Yeah, I mean, when you hear this, what goes through your head?
Look, I was very moved by that intro that you just gave leading into this segment because, couple things. One, you brought up American hostages. No one ever talks about them.
Yeah.
We've got 5-6 American hostages. Not even our president talks about them ever. We've never heard anything about them. Why didn't we send the operators in to get our Americans back? We could. We certainly could have in the very beginning, October 8th, October 9th. They're always ready. They can do it. But this administration doesn't seem to care. But then you also think about the other aspects of that massacre. I mean, when you rape, murder, incinerate, dismember, decapitate, and kidnap innocent men, women, children, and babies, and in one case, even an infant in the womb, then you come out and you say, I am Hamas on the streets of America, relying on your purported First Amendment rights to do so. You're supporting and are, in many respects, a form of true evil.
Yeah,
and they're saying death to America, death to, whatever. Now, here's what's interesting about the Colombia situation.
Yeah.
So as of Tuesday, they're sending in people. They're like, finally, Colombia is starting to get involved, I guess. I don't really understand this. But they come out and say, hey, this encampment's too big. You need to go home. They make some arrests of some students. Are they students? I'm not really sure.
Right.
But they have some of the
people. I'll get to that in a second, too, because we have a quote on that. Yep.
So they come in after them. They basically, Colombia issues this statement saying, hey, listen, we've got this under control. Some of the people from the encampment, they're going to disperse now. They're going to follow all of our rules on campus. So here's what's interesting. So Wednesday morning, this statement's issued here. It says, before the school issued its statement, Colombia Students for Justice in Palestine, very nice, love that, said administrators threatened to bring in police and the National Guard if protesters did not acquiesce to their demands. Their quote back, we remain steadfast in our convictions and will not be intimidated by the university's disturbing threat of an escalation of violence, the group said in a statement. This tells me they're not going anywhere. They don't have any plans. They want this to become violent.
Okay, so I had the opportunity last night to talk to somebody who's close to the Board of Regents effectively at Columbia. And here is the concern from their end. They believe they have a combination of two different types of people in this group at Columbia. Number one, you have those students who we've called useful idiots that are along for the ride that don't seem to understand what's really happening here, but are hopping on board with a cause they don't fully understand.
Did you know that the Hamas leadership actually calls them useful idiots?
Well, that's right. I mean, this is no secret, right? But they're not the only ones. According to the FBI, and according to other sources, New York City police officers, there's a real concern here that there are hardened terrorists within this group that are instigators, that are trying to push this and push this and push this. There's nothing they want more than conflict at Colombia so that they can then expand the issues as far as maybe potentially a terrorist attack. That's what the biggest concern is right now at Colombia, that if they jump in too quickly and things get out of control quickly, we could be looking at an escalation situation on the campus.
They're crazy. If they've waited too long already.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have waited more than one day. Look, you've got violations of U.S. law, state law, maybe local ordinances, but you definitely have violations of university policy. Every university has these same policies. You don't get to camp out near the duck pond. You
know, right, right.
Whatever Colombia's equivalent of that is, you don't get to do it.
Well,
And so if you have that policy in place and you sit back and you allow this to fester over and over and over again. So these people not only said, bring it on, Colombia, I really don't care what you have to say. When there was a minor disbursement anyway, they all came back.
Yep.
Right.
The next day.
Yeah.
They were back camping again.
Okay.
And there is federal law that protects college students, like the students that actually attend schools, that they can't be bullied or harassed, intimidated.
Okay, so let's get into that language.
Why not enforce it?
Right.
Right. No. And I want you to listen to Yale in a story that came out of Yale. Then I want you to respond to whether we're looking at a violation of that law, because I think we clearly are. But I'm not a lawyer, and you definitely are. So let's go, Ava, let's go to clip six. We're going to play for you a portion of a story that aired on NBC News. And then, Reeve, I want to get your reaction to this.
This morning, police say at least 45 pro-Palestinian protesters were arrested at Yale University for violating Yale's policies and instructions. Police say they were later released. In a statement, the university adding that Yale does not tolerate behavior that threatened, harassed, or intimidated others. Meanwhile, at Columbia, today's classes were online only, with the university's president calling for a reset to de-escalate the rancor, while also adding more than 100 safety personnel to campus after more than 100 protesters were arrested last week. But with videos like this emerging online and another showing a young woman holding a sign pointing in the direction.
Okay, hold on right there, Ave. We may play that again for just 1 second. Okay, we are Hamas, right? Guarantee you she's not a student. Guaranteed. But
her face is all wrapped up, too.
Well, of course, right?
Because, you know, let's protest with our face closed so we can still get a job someplace.
Absolutely.
When it's time for us. Yeah.
And then another woman with her face wrapped says Al-Qassam's next targets, pointing to Jewish students. Okay. Meaning, again, we played the video at the top of the show. That's Al-Qassam. That's who you were dealing with here. Well, you're talking about people that are going in and slaughtering innocent people.
Al-Qassam is the military unit for Hamas.
Yeah. So your thoughts on where this goes in some of this, you know, this protected speech versus non-protected speech. Where do you see this right now in situations like that?
Open up the equal protection lens, right? Just like you were saying earlier, if these were KKK students, white supremacists, whatever it is, out there chanting death to all minorities, whether it be, you know, black, Jews, Hispanics, whoever, everyone that they hate, there is no chance that this would be tolerated. So why is it tolerated needs to be the question. And I think that's a very deep conversation, but you have an enormous funding stream coming from Qatar into all of these universities, especially the Ivy League universities. They are awash in wealth coming into the Islamic studies departments and things like that. But really, what do? I think that if you wanted to have any credibility as a leader of any institution, whether it be a university or otherwise, you need to treat everybody equally. So these pro-Hamas, not pro-Palestinian people, whether they're students or not, need to be taken off campus. If they won't leave when ordered to do so, then they have to be removed by law enforcement and not ever allowed to return. The level of discipline that I think they should face isn't suspension. It's expulsion. They need to go. They have no right to exist in an environment like this where they are threatening, harassing, intimidating, and even violently attacking. One girl was stabbed in the eye in the last few days by these pro-Hamas
With a Palestinian flag.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's so fascinating, the cowardice of all of these protesters, all of them. I mean, they're all masked up with scarves or COVID masks, protecting their identities so that what are they going to get a job on Wall Street next year? So they want to protest now, or not really protest, riot and dehumanize people for their religion, something they say they can't tolerate.
So here's what's interesting about the Yale protests. They chose to plant themselves in front of a World War II memorial that was memorializing Yale students who fought in World War II, okay, that fought the Nazis. They ripped down a flag from this memorial, and then they start this big protest. If they are taken into custody by Yale police or New York police, do you think they're looking to see, hey, are these actual students? Are these guys from America? Do we have people that we should be watching more closely, like Mark alleged to at the beginning of the show with, are these terrorist cells? Do we have some terrorist activity mixed in with this? Do you think that they're looking into that? Because I think that'd be the number one thing to do.
No, I don't. I don't think they're looking into it. You heard them. They said they were removed from campus. They didn't even say arrested, unless I misinterpreted that. But no, they were removed from campus and then released. So all it was a displacement, taking one person who's causing trouble or perceived to be causing trouble in one area and just moving them to some other area so that they can come back. Now, should they be investigating who they are? 100%, yes, in many respects because of what Mark brought up. If we have foreign actors, and we know we do, the border's wide open. That's another discussion we've had and can have. We know for a fact, FBI has been very vocal about this, that we have their equivalent of special operators in this country working towards mass chaos, violence, and their hope, of course, is always another 9/11 like type of incident. And there are many opportunities for them to do this because all they have to do is wrap their faces and join these crowds. You know, there's no obligation that you are a student in these crowds. It seems like they're welcoming anybody and everybody, unless you're a Jew.
Right, which is unfathomable, I think.
In the America I grew up in, you can be any religion and be able to walk wherever you want and not have to worry about your safety because of that immutable characteristic that you can't help.
It's beyond devastating to see what's going on right now. And the fire just keeps burning bigger and bigger and hotter.
Because they're allowing it to
metastasize. Yeah, exactly right. So that there is no stepping in. So if you're still at your old job or you're dealing with the FBI right now, and they say to you, all right, Reed, what do we do here? You know, you're sitting in New York City and then what do we do about Columbia? What do we do about Yale? So we stop this from becoming a devastating situation that could escalate into either some sort of conflict with police or some sort of terror incident. What do you tell them?
Infiltrate. We would absolutely infiltrate these groups. And we would make some arrests, probably some minor arrests. There are so many ways to address this. You can arrest them for disorderly conduct. If there's a federal offense of some kind that we could bring a suspected terror-supporting operative in, and then you work them. You use them to find out who else is involved. And that's the way you do it. Just like we investigated cartels, you might arrest somebody transporting 1,000 pounds of cocaine or something, and then you find out who his boss is and then who he reports to and then more about the organization as a whole. No different here, except it has to be done very quickly because this is evolving into something that if it's not addressed aggressively, and it's not, then what they – quite justifiably believe, I think, is that they have free reign to do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, and they can, you know, all the hate speech, all the I hate America, burning of flags. I say, get the hell out of here, honestly. Yeah. Like, get out of our country if you want nothing to do with this. Because if you think this is going to stop,
could not
Jewish,
agree more.
It is absolutely, they hate Christians, they hate America. I mean, it's going to expand. And I'm frustrated when I hear about anybody that's actually American thinking, hey, these guys are in favor of us too, so we should get on board with this protest. This is not the silent protest or the sit-in protest of the 1960s. It's not what's happening here. I want people to remember a page of our history books where the rise of Hitler started on campuses. It started with students.
They were activists.
Yeah.
They were literally called activists at the time.
Yeah. And I think we saw how that turned out. And I just think, you think this is no big deal. This will pass. This is just today's youth, you know, expressing themselves. That is not what's happening. And I think that we have a real issue that people need to be waking up to. And I mean, it's even now, you know, getting more dangerous here.
Well, so let's get to that. Let's get to what's going on at UNM. So starting on Monday night, you saw this expand to the duck pond at UNM. Now, what I want to show you, or actually have you listen to, is a song that goes along with the flyer that they issued to try to get people in to protest at the duck pond. And it also has a list of exactly what their demands are. And their demands are basically get out of the nation of Israel. It's basically an anti-Semitic poster saying, you know, get away from Israel. We should not have anything to do with Israel. And so just to leave it there, now this and the UNM protests have not gone as far as some of the other protests yet. But listen to the music that goes along with this flyer, and then we'll talk about it.
Israeli war criminals will not be pardoned. Only a bullet to the back of the head is what is promised. The faces of martyrs.
Stop right there for a second. They are threatening a bullet to the back of the head of Israelis right there out of the chute.
They are literally saying the best way to get more students to this protest is to promote the assassination of anyone who's Jewish.
It's unreal. And then just a little bit more of some horrendous rap. I guess it's rap.
The faces of martyrs won't escape my thoughts. Israelis aim their missiles at hospitals and mosques. They have no honor. They cut off the water. USA-funded missiles killed mothers and daughters. More than 70.
Okay. Now, they conveniently forget the mothers and daughters who were killed were on October 7th. And, you know, we could get into the back and forth on Hamas hiding in hospitals and in schools to deliberately drive up.
Which is their MO.
Civilian death count. I mean, it's absolutely their MO.
That's what they do. And the fact that I hate that they use their own people. They don't protect their own people, that they sacrifice them. They want those sacrifices. So then they can exclaim like, oh, this is what's happening. And then you get pro-Iran.
Well,
we're getting pro-Iran chants. We're getting pro-Iran emails coming into our
inbox. I stand with Yemen.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Have you lost your minds? But do you know what Iran is?
The other thing that we need to not forget is the casualty statistics that come out of the out of the Gaza Strip. They all come from the Ministry of Health.
Okay,
the Hamas Ministry of Health.
Okay, so
two things that they do. Things that they do that are important. One, obviously, they exaggerate numbers. But two, they don't count the casualties of combatants.
Right, within
at
that.
All. So they'll come up. They'll throw a number out there. There's no research involved. Everybody across the board accepts those numbers at face value, and then it goes out into the world.
You make a great point. So Ava, let's go to clip 10 for a second, because I want to get into this. So this is the journal article on the protests. And this is where I think journalistic incompetence comes in. Okay. Here's the headline right here. It says, interrupt business as usual. That's the headline in the journal. UNM students and others protest treatment of Palestinians in Israel. Okay. And this was written by Gregory R.C. Hassman. I just want to grab one paragraph here that he said, and it's number 11, Ava. Let's listen to this. This is interesting. According to news reports, the war was sparked by Hamas on October 7th. It's not news reports. It's clips from Hamas murdering people. Okay, those aren't news reports. And so
they took over people's Facebook accounts and bragged about it and showed video of them killing Jews.
It's ludicrous, right? So go back to the quote, Ava. So here it is. Hamas and other militants killed around 1,200 people, mostly civilians, and kidnapped around 250. Israel says militants are still holding about 100 hostages and the remains of more than 30 others. More than 34,000 Palestinians have been killed. He does not do any attribution. He accepts it as fact. He doesn't even accept October 7th as fact, but he accepts 34,000 Palestinians dead when exactly what you said, Reeve, many of those are enemy combatants. And we don't know if the 34,000 is right because it comes from the Gaza Ministry of Defense. It's ludicrous. But this is how it bad reporting.
Yeah, and it fuels the fire.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, no, it absolutely does. So let's keep going here, and it will go back up to the solidarity with Gaza, okay, and the UNM encampment. Here's what they need. So they put out a flyer, and like, here's what we need. We need food and water and zip ties. I don't know exactly what they need. I don't know what's going on there. But and let's see, staple guns and tape, all these different supplies. Well, they then issued a statement saying they got everything they needed yesterday. All right. And then UNM comes back to their credit and they went out and issued a statement and basically said, and this is from James P. Holloway. He's the provost and executive vice president for academic affairs. He is a pretty strongly worded letter anyway. I mean, we got that much out of it. And he was. He said, hey, look, you're not going to take this over. You're not going to build camps here and stay here indefinitely. You're violating university policy. And they made it quite clear. Now, we'll see what UNM ends up doing about it. But at least at this point, they've taken some steps and they did move them out Monday night for a while and then they're back again.
But just like all of the other universities, the poison ivy universities of Columbia, Yale, Harvard, et cetera, the professors at UNM came out in support.
Well, protesters. So here's the clip. This clip on that, Reeve. So let's take a look at this, Christine. You can read it. It's unbelievable here. Now, we don't see a whole lot of direct names attributed to this, so who knows how true it is. But here's what they're saying.
Earlier today, we received notice that educators in support of our efforts on campus have begun coming out in solidarity, encouraging their students to participate and even holding classes directly from the camp. What a beautiful show of solidarity. We welcome educators near and far to follow suit and come hold space with us at the camp.
I mean, if you've got teachers holding classes at protests, which have been
sold
as anti-Jewish, put a bullet in the back of the head of Jews, and then they show up and teach their classes there?
We are here in support of our students who are advocating for the assassination of Jews.
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell?
Are we going to do something about that?
How is it not more real than that?
Yeah.
Well, and their slogan, you guys, and we don't have a clip of this, but I have it on my phone, actually, is which was given to us by a good source that gives us a lot of information for our show. Their campaign is protect the pack with the Lobo Wolf, right? That's what they're going with here at UNM.
Yeah.
These people, these professors, in my opinion, should be fired.
Yeah.
Fired.
The PAC doesn't include Jewish students, though.
No.
Obviously.
No. Oh, well, of course not.
I certainly hope every family of a Jewish person, let alone anybody else that have a voice of sanity, are not planning to send their kids to these schools that allow this to happen.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's
80,000 a year at Columbia.
You get
this.
Well, and that's the thing. UNM's, you know, we're going to watch closely what UNM does. Hopefully they'll step in. And I think that, again, there's a fine line you have to walk here, but obviously you don't get to set up 10 encampments. So that should be gone every day. Each evening, that should be gone.
I don't agree there's a fine line. I really don't. I think that coming down forcefully as that letter intimates,
right,
that they will,
yep,
then you could set the tone for other universities. There's a chance here for UNM to stand out. We protect the safety of all students, including, unimaginably, Jewish students.
But, Reeve, at the same time, though, there is a concern, I think, and this is some of what we heard from our source at Columbia, which was they're concerned a bit about the fact that if they come in too hard, it's exactly what they want.
Marcus, there's no choice. They may get what they want. Perhaps there's a segment,
yeah,
the more radical segment.
Yeah.
That wants that and will use it as a way to branch out into other activities. But this is as insidious as it gets, and it has to be shut down.
Yeah. No, I think it's fair.
It is
that's a good point.
Vile anti-Semitism. And knowing, we've all agreed, that if this were reversed and it was the KKK out there doing exactly this, there's no chance that the university would be standing by their First Amendment right to call for the death of everyone, not them.
Yeah.
Or
why tolerate this?
Like anti-LGBTQ. Can you imagine if we were out there saying death to them, death to them? I mean, that would be shut down. That would be shut down immediately.
Yeah, absolutely, it would be. No, it's very fair. It's a good point. And again, it's easiest to get it now versus waiting till it becomes a Columbia situation, because these things are like fires. They start to feed on each other and they get bigger and bigger. And obviously, it's never going to get any easier to stop it. So very fair points. All right, let's get into a couple other issues that I want to talk about with you, Reeve, that we're seeing across the country. They're tied in some ways. These are not based out of universities. They're based more out of creating problems for the general public. So we go back to San Francisco last week, where they shut down the Golden Gate Bridge, and you had people literally lined up sitting on the Golden Gate Bridge as part of the protest for what's going on in the Middle East here, spent hours sitting on the bridge here. Yet we continue to see, and this gets to your point, Reeb, which is that this is being handled in a very cautious way. So tell me, from your perspective, how should we be dealing with stuff like what's happened to the Golden Gate Bridge or at O'Hare?
The way Ron DeSantis handled it in Jacksonville last week. They were removed immediately. So, yeah, I think he proved that if you step in immediately with an appropriate level of force, you physically move them out of the way so that somebody in the back of an ambulance on their way to the hospital isn't prevented from life-saving care that that person needs. Or how about this? Mom and dad who commute together got to get to work to feed their kids. Why do they get to disrupt the normal flow of life in this country? And why are they coddled in a way that no one else would be? It's ridiculous. DeSantis proved how you do it.
Yeah.
You send the cops out there, you grab them by their shoulders, and you drag them off the street.
So do you think this gets into a red state versus blue state issue, where you have blue states in New York, in Illinois with O'Hare in that situation, California and San Francisco with that situation, a lot of the universities on the East Coast? Do you think they're more reticent to jump in and do what needs to be done?
Well, I hate that term. I really do. That blue state versus red state. It's just common sense that you can't allow this stuff. It is, though, right? I mean,
well, it's hard. You can see the through line
in some jurisdictions like ours, where crime is no longer illegal. You get to do essentially what you want. Where recidivism seems to be a new right that we have, that we've built in for repeat offenders, even repeat violent offenders. So yeah, in Florida, where crime is not illegal, you face
or is illegal.
Still illegal.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so confused by it all that I'm confusing myself. But these are confusing times because nothing makes sense. So yeah, in Florida, where crime is still illegal, even minor crime, like you shoplift in Florida, you're going to get locked up. It's not a life sentence or anything, but there you'll face consequences. In San Francisco and in New York and in Albuquerque, New Mexico, we've decided that what they call de minimis offenses are no longer prosecutable for whatever reason. And that's just a policy decision. So it does, in a way, come down to red state philosophy versus blue state philosophy. And the reality is, you're probably safer in a community like Florida for that reason alone. Simply the policy decision to enforce the law will make you more safe. The policy decision to no longer enforce the law will make you less safe.
Okay. Well, we're going to do one more on this, and it's a little different. And so we recently have been talking about Alec Baldwin because he's going on trial here, coming up over the summer for what happened with the Rush shooting. But he was in a coffee shop in New York City, and Alec Baldwin is he's very pro-Israel. He's been solid with that from the very beginning. And an activist who is, an anti-Semitic activist comes after him. And so we want to play the video for you, and then we'll react to it.
Why did you kill that lady? You killed that lady and got no jail time? No jail time, Alec? No jail time, Alec. You're putting innocent people in jail, Alec Baldwin.
I'm so sorry.
Free Palestine, Alec, just one time, and I'll leave you alone. I'll leave you alone, I swear. Just say free Palestine one time. One time.
He's trying to tell her he's not going to do it.
One time.
Call the
police. He's trying to get her out of the restaurant.
You know he's a criminal. You know he's a criminal. Come on, Alec. Just say free Palestine one time. One time. Just one time. Please. And I'll leave you alone. Free Palestine. Israelism. Please say it. One time.
And he knocks the cell phone out of her hand. Okay, so Christy and I had a bit of a disagreement on this.
Well, from when you see the video, it looks like he punches her, is what it looks like in the video. It's not what happened. He did just knock the cell phone out of her hand. I just think, I'm sure he's sick of it. I'm sure he's, you know, that would be incredibly annoying. The fact that the employee at the restaurant also just backed off and let her do whatever she wanted. She should have been escorted from that premises immediately. It would have, you know, I see that guy was kind of a kid is my guess, you know,
yeah, he didn't know what to do.
He's a kid in a sandwich shop. Right. So he's just kind of trying to like keep the peace, but there was no peace in his store. I don't know. Alec Baldwin has a bit of a temper. He's known for having a temper. He's getting ready to go on trial. This woman wanted to get under his skin. That was her whole goal. She knew he wasn't going to say that. I mean, give me a break. She knew that he could flare and he did it. So it's like, you know, I would just be like, bye. I would have left the shop. I would have been like, bye. And I just would have walked away.
Right. But Alec can't do that.
No,
obviously, clearly
not. He had to go ahead and break the woman's phone.
That makes me look at Alec Baldwin and go, I get it. I don't blame him for doing it. I mean, I wouldn't do it myself, but I do understand why he got frustrated and why he's had enough.
Yeah. And then now she gets to go to the police and say, he broke my phone and I'm going to prosecute against Alec Baldwin. That's what this woman's going to do.
Incredibly obnoxious. So where do we stand on this? Legally, what is Alec Baldwin, you know, going to have an issue here?
Yeah, he'll have an issue for sure. So I see it through both lenses, actually. How incredibly annoying that lady is. But he gave her what she wanted.
Yeah.
Right. Had he just walked away, I think he would have walked away feeling a little bit humiliated and pissed off. And, you know, why do I have to deal with that kind of feeling that we all have in strange situations like that? But unfortunately, he gave her what she wanted. And now he's going to have to deal with it. Even if he had walked away, he'd never even know who she was for the rest of his life, hopefully.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't know what I would do in that situation. You say you wouldn't do it. I don't know if I wouldn't do it.
I've had some people. I've had some people yell some stuff at me close range a few times. And you know, obviously when it depends on the situation you're in. But I think you have to walk away. I mean, or you can engage, but you just can't get, you know, the physical point. It just kept boiling in him. And you see that's just who he is.
Well, yeah, he could have turned around and said, go Israel. I support Israel 100% or whatever. And then just been like, she's going to keep at it. But say, you got my statement.
That's
move
a
on.
Great response.
You know,
yeah,
move
that's,
on.
That's what I think he should have done, but whatever.
Yeah, no. So, okay.
She has emotional distress, and now she's going to go to therapy.
Oh,
and
totally. Of course.
Get a $100,000 settlement in the next
exactly.
10 weeks.
Oh, she got exactly what she wanted, and he should be smart enough by now to not fall into that trap. But anyway.
Yep. Okay. So I want to talk about an issue here. It's a crime issue. This is what we're going to finish on. And Reeve, you're the perfect guy to have on about this, because the last time you were on the show, we talked about one of the key things getting back to reducing crime in Albuquerque is rebuttable presumption. And we'll talk about what that is in just a second. And you've made the case on the federal side, because you did your prosecutions on the federal side, where the laws are much more stringent and much better than they are on the state side. So the governor's called for a special session. She has said she wants to address crime and address a variety of issues, you know, felons with guns and potentially rebuttable presumption. So let's listen to what the governor says. We're actually going to listen to this clip.
Also saying she would like to see changes in how the state decides if a defendant is released from jail between their arrest and the trial. That change would require the legislature to pass rebuttable presumption. It would require people to prove they're not a danger if released.
It works in the federal system. It mitigates risk in the community. I don't know why we're not replicating it here.
Governor, you're
okay,
calling
I can tell you why we're not replicating it here, because you and the legislature have no interest in actually passing laws that keep people safe. And now if the governor's on board with this, that's great. What are your thoughts on listening to that?
Where has she been?
Yeah.
That's what I'd like to know. But all right, she's finally opened her mind to it. then that is a very good thing. We have two things. We have a twofold crime problem. One is, as we discussed earlier, the reality is in certain jurisdictions, including ours, crime literally is no longer illegal. It just is, okay? When it's no longer being enforced, it's effectively not even a statute that's enforceable because it's just ignored. And so if you have that, then we can go nowhere with this discussion. If you actually decide that you're going to start enforcing the law, then this is a very, very good thing. Because what it means is those who are arrested with certain offenses, mostly the most common example are violent offenses,
yep.
You know, armed robbery, assault of any kind, obviously all levels of homicide. In the federal system, they expand the rebuttable presumption fairly dramatically. It includes drug trafficking and a few other offenses that probably I don't think the state would embrace. But if we just do a rebuttable presumption on violent crime, it will have, without any doubt, a measurable impact on violent crime. And the reason for that is, regardless of what the percentage is, you know, you always hear 10% of the offenders are committing 90% of the crime, yep. And all that other stuff. I actually think the fact that it's never been enforced, law has stopped being enforced, that lower percentage has increased because you see prior offenders who wouldn't step over that line realizing, why not? I'm going to join that group of varsity offenders because nothing's going to happen to me. But whether it's 10%, 20% or 30%, doesn't matter. If you have a rebuttable presumption that you are a danger to the community or a flight risk, and I could also see the state not concerning itself with flight risk. I've heard rumors about that.
Which is a huge mistake.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
Because a lot of offenders are mobile.
Yep.
But, you know, whatever. Let's just say they go with a rebuttable presumption that you are a danger to the community or any other person. Very, very effective in domestic violence types of situations. And if, like, almost every violent offender in Albuquerque has one or two prior offenses, then those prior offenses should be used as part of the rebuttable presumption. The problem is what they're saying now, and if this actually is how it plays out, that you can't use the conduct in the crime for which you've been arrested itself. Let's say you're arrested for armed robbery.
That's crazy.
Let's say you're arrested for armed robbery. You stuck a gun in somebody's face and you told them what's yours is now mine. Apparently, there's some talk that the offense itself can't be used as part of the
rebuttable. You're hearing this out of maybe what the legislature may consider?
Part of the rebuttable presumption ridiculous. Analysis.
It doesn't make sense.
I've had many, many conversations with some of the legislators who've been trying to get I've actually helped them understand you know, why it would be important to implement this.
Well, like Bill Ream has been a guy who's been on this front, right? Yeah.
Huge.
And he's leaving. He's retiring. Do you have any confidence in the legislature's ability, and the governor can fire up a soundbite, which is the easiest thing to do. The question now is, we literally have legislators who do not want tough laws. They just don't. They've proven that. They kill great bill after great bill in that legislature. So the question is, do you have any confidence that a tough, rebuttable presumption law can come out of this legislature? Or could you get some Republican help? And so maybe you take these 15 or so House members, 10 or so Senate members who are lost on this, and you push them out to the side, you get Republicans and moderate Democrats to come together and try to get something through. Can the governor, do you have any confidence you can push that across the line?
What I worry about is that as this flows through the process, that it'll be, let's say we start with a real strong presumption that the offense itself, the probable cause analysis is always relevant. And prior criminal history, prior incidents of not showing up to court, things like that. If all of that comes together and is collectively used as part of the rebuttable presumption that you are a danger to the community or a flight risk, then we would be in good shape. My worry is that there's going to be legislators that are going to try to siphon off portions of that otherwise very good, well-intended bill. And you'll have situations where they'll build in a variety of exceptions. For example, you can't use the conduct for which he was arrested because he hasn't been convicted of it yet. So what can you use? You know, in the federal system, you have the probable cause analysis, and you can put the agent on the stand and he can testify that these things happened. I was there physically present and saw this. And you use it for no other purpose than establishing by clear and convincing evidence, which is a higher standard, whether or not the person should be presumed to be a flight risk or a danger to the community.
Yeah.
I just think they're going to try to piecemeal this legislation and take away the guts, the nuts and bolts of it, if you will actually result in a safer community.
Well, and that's where the governor, having the bully pulpit she does, will have an opportunity to hold their feet to the fire and put her money where her mouth is and say, we're going to, I'll call out my own legislators. I don't care. You're going to do this the right way. And I hope she does. I really hope she does.
Yes, I do too. Hey man, I'm surprised to see this and I'm very happy to see it. So I hope she does it.
Cynical Christie shows up on scene. I know, but, here's what somebody, I kind of got the milling, these rumors kind of thing bubbled up that people were telling me about, which is they love to kill a good bill, like Bill Reams' crime bills. They love to kill it, and then they want to introduce it as their own, so then they might get credit as a party.
That's great, but they don't do it. Like, they don't do it. It's not like we've had great crime bills. They've killed Bill Reams' bills time after time. They haven't resurrected them with a Democrat sponsor and passed them.
Well, no, not yet. But I think that's what's cooking, because if the goal is to bring light to what the Democratic Party's doing in hopes of helping these legislatures as they go back through reelection processes in November, if that is really an end game to this, to make their party look better, I have no question they will take a perfectly good bill that they crushed earlier. They reintroduce it.
I totally agree. And you're cynical. You're right. But at the same time, we have a almost supermajority in the roundhouse. So at this point, we have no other choice. And if it means they take a good bill and put their name on it and it makes us safer, I don't know what choice we have.
No, I don't. I think she's right, huh, Chris? I think you're very right. It's not just going to be stealing Bill Reams' bill. Unfortunately, what it will be, or I think my opinion, what I think it very likely will be, is the theft of his bill, the watered down of his bill.
Right. That's a bigger concern.
The watered down of his bill substantially.
Yep.
And then the public perception that they passed the original bill without ever getting into the nuts and bolts of it, where they watered it down to effectively become nothing less or more than what we already have.
It's
so
awful.
An ineffective bill is what you're saying. Yeah, so they're going to pass an ineffective bill.
I mean, if they pass Bill's bill. Great. I just don't see it happening.
No. Okay. I don't either. And I think that I would love to, you know, look, I would love to think that they could work across party lines, because they are going to have to work cross party lines on this to some degree. They're going to have to, because I think their left flank's not going to support them. All right, one other thing, and you tweeted
that's a good
this.
Point. That's a very good point. They're not.
Yeah, and so they're going to. It's going to have to be bipartisan to some degree, I think. Mm-hmm. But we'll see what happens. But I do believe the Republicans in the roundhouse will do what they need to do to get good bills across the line for public safety. I firmly believe that. And the question is, will they be any good? And by the way, they'll demonize them for not voting for him and the whole deal. But that's where a curious and competent media would be critical. Sadly, I don't think we have it. So, all right, let's go with one other tweet. And this is what we're going to end on. This is incredibly frustrating when I read your tweet on this. And so we want to just kind of lay this out for you. And here's the tweet. You say, guess why the crime rate narrative is being pushed right now? Many of the worst blue crime ridden cities no longer report their crime stats to the FBI. Why, you ask? Well, that would be because my alma mater, the DOJ, changed the way local departments report crime to the feds. The reporting is now optional, not mandatory as it was previously. Now, only 44% of all police departments report all of their crimes. 24% partially participate, but only reporting some crime. 32% of all police agencies don't report anything starting in 2022, including LA, New York, Miami, DC, and Baltimore, all exceptionally violent, dangerous American cities. Thus, the FBI, by not accounting for a single crime in these municipalities, essentially claimed violent crime went down 6% and murders went down 13%. Just imagine if they had included these jurisdictions. The FBI can no longer be trusted to provide accurate crime stats for the nation, so their stats should be ignored. We'd be better off just trusting our own observations. That is devastating. Mm-hmm. What in the world is happening? I mean, the fact is, those numbers probably should have gone down even more if they really had gone down because of all those big-time cities that aren't included.
I wish that that wasn't the case, but I think what we have is a need to have a crime has gone down perception in the public because it's repeated ad nauseum now in the media that you just described a few minutes ago, the media that we don't have faith and trust in. And then you have politicians like our governor say, look, crime's going down around. No, it's not, though. It's not. And everyone with two eyes and, you know, their own gut knows that's the case. In this community, very few people are not touched by crime. Everyone in this city is touched by crime. And so you feel it. It's visceral. If it's not you, it's your family member or a friend. And you hear it every single day when you go into work or you talk with your colleagues and friends. It's a nationwide problem, and I think that DOJ needs to get back to being honest with the American people, because if we can't trust the stats on something like that, then what can we trust?
Yeah, it is. It's unbelievable. And when did this start?
Looks like around 2022 was the last year when this really began to take off. Could you imagine a voluntary reporting requirement?
Well, no, it's just about keeping information from people. That's what this is. The more the public is in the dark, the more the people that have these elected offices can do whatever they want because they're the gatekeepers of the information. And instead of having a media that would jump out and say, no, we want the real data so we can hold them accountable, they don't say a word.
Why didn't that journalist, when she said that, when our governor said that, why didn't he say, yeah, but it's been clear over the last couple of years, certain big jurisdictions around the country are no longer reporting crime stats like they used to. How does that affect the crime rates? Is it really going down? And what's your intention as governor of New Mexico? Are we going to be true and faithful in our reporting, our voluntary reporting requirements?
But yeah, there's no reason to believe we will.
Why would we be transparent on that? Because that would show exactly that what we're not doing well.
We're in bad shape here. I don't think that she would be transparent because it's against her political interests.
I just think that's what's so sad is this has become all political.
Yep.
Like, let's hide how the crime
protect,
stats.
How do you protect
those in office?
Yep. Instead of doing what's right. Wow.
I mean, there's a new carjacking ring in town that not a lot of people are talking about. Have you heard about it?
Mm-mm.
It's bad. They're taking high-end cars mostly, and they're coming at you hard with rifles. I mean, this isn't one gun. You're going to be staring down the barrel of a AK-47
or an AR-15
or any other kind of large capacity type of firearm. And they're coming at you hard, and they're taking these higher-end cars and straight to Mexico, from what I understand. And
in our state?
In our city.
Yeah,
In Albuquerque.
Yeah. I've been hearing this now for weeks that it's well organized. I don't know if these are foreign actors like they have in Chicago and New York, where they're dealing with Venezuelan gangs that we've just let freely roam
right
the
in.
Country.
Yep.
Very, very violent and dangerous Venezuelan, Colombian gangs, all reporting to their bosses back in Colombia and Venezuela.
Yeah.
It could be them, because they are very, very well organized, especially in home burglaries, for example, are just skyrocketing. And obviously they're focused on the so-called blue jurisdictions because they know not only will they probably not face legal consequences, but they won't be turned over to ICE because they're sanctuary cities.
Which we are here in Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Well, we'll have you come back. That was a bit of a downer.
Holy cow. That was leads. We probably should open with that one, but anyway.
Goodness. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming. Thanks for giving us your perspective. We always enjoy it.
Appreciate it.
And yeah, we'll have you come back and we would love to talk to you about, hey, there's some great things that have happened to make this place. We're going to do it one of these days. I don't know when, but it's going to happen. But thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. We'll be back with a new show for you coming up on Monday.
You've been listening to the No Doubt About It podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We know we had a blast. Make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at No Doubt About It Podcast.
No Doubt About It.
The No Doubt About It Podcast is a Choose Adventure Media production. See you next time on No Doubt About It.
There is no doubt about it.